This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
The following content is not suitable for children.
Spicing it up.
Ooh, what are we going to talk about? All the external things that people use and do?
Couples do lots of things to introduce novelty. Pornography, vibrators, toys, drugs.
Oh my gosh. Who knows?
All right, we're going to help
couples
today.
Take it away. Okay.
Take it away.
Welcome to Foreplay Radio, Couples and Sex Therapy. I'm Lori Watson, your sex therapist.
And I'm George Fallon, your couples therapist.
And we are passionate about talking about sex and helping you develop a way to talk to each other.
Our mission is to help our audience develop a healthier relationship to sex that integrates the mind, the heart, and the body.
All right, Lori, so we're always assessing and try to help couples have conversations around things that are going to be gas pedals and improve the levels of engagement in their sexual relationship, or breaks, things that turn them off and make them not want to have sex. Mm-hmm. And this is just another category, right? External factors, things outside their immediate relationship that often couples bring to spice things up, mm-hmm. but sometimes can really dampen things down.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the same thing can be either a gas pedal or a brake, right? I mean, not necessarily generic categories of good and bad things. People just feel differently about them. And sometimes
exactly.
Sometimes the partners feel differently about the same thing.
Oftentimes. What's a gas pedal for one is a brake for the other. And they can't talk
exactly.
about it. That's just
exactly.
mathematically a problem.
Yep. Yep.
So that what we're hoping to do today is just to open up some space to kind of talk about what could work, what could not work about these things, and set the stage for you to have a conversation with your partner.
Okay. So let's talk about porn. I mean,
right,
there's no denying that porn is erotic. I mean, seeing other people make love, seeing naked bodies, seeing something sexual happening on screen, woohoo. I mean, it can make our bodies respond even if we think it's dumb or if we don't like the content. You know, our bodies are just kind of wired to respond to that and get aroused and get excited.
Right. I mean, there's visual stimulation, there's auditory stimulation.
Yes. It
starts to trigger the erotic thinking of the
yes.
brain, right? So
I
on
had,
lots
I
of levels,
a,
it's stimulating.
I had a woman tell me, you know, like she didn't like to watch porn, but she really liked to listen to porn. You know, just because of all the sounds and stuff, that was super exciting to her.
Right. And so you can see how it can be a gas pedal
yes,
to certain members.
Yes.
And we also know there's a big problem with lots of people who get so kind of used to their brain being turned on by porn that it causes them not to be present with their partner, right? They're thinking about something else. They're not fully present. Right.
Yes.
It takes them out of the present moment with their partner. And it lands pretty terribly for the partner, right? When you're with somebody who's not really there.
Right. I think this is kind of the objection to porn is, you know, does it take us away from our partner? Men and women watch porn, although I will say only men pay for porn, basically. Women will not give up resources for porn, but they will watch it. But I think that that's a central objection, especially in this age. You know, women tell me, I really want to have sex, and my partner is kind of spent because he's already done it with the screen. That,
right.
That feels like a competing attachment.
Exactly. It wouldn't make sense why that then feels like a break. My partner's not really here, would rather be with someone else, is thinking about somebody else. I'm not attractive. I'm not enough. I can't measure up. Right. Then it becomes a huge break for the partner.
It does. It does. And I think that still women feel that their partners would prefer the way that woman looks, you know, the huge boobs or great butt or whatever that they don't have. So they're comparing themselves. Although I just think, I don't know. I don't know that it's particular for men. I think it's just naked women, you know, hot women, naked
women. Well, men do the same thing. I mean, do you see a man in pornography that don't have a huge penis?
Right. Right. Talk about comparing and maybe not feeling up for it.
You wonder why most men have faulty assumptions around the average penis size when every pornography they see is an elephant-sized penis.
Yes, yes, I agree.
I love the statement that a priest told me one day. He said, what's wrong with porn is not what it shows, it's what it doesn't show. It gives such a limited physical performance focus, you know, and it leaves out, you know, all these emotional forms of communication, the spiritual, getting people in their body. So, you know, what is the type of porn you're watching? I think fun thing today, there are so many different types of porn. Mm-hmm. Porn made by women, porn made by couples that just kind of share porn. Porn, light porn, you know, sometimes people, it's just books. It's the erotic fantasy they're trying to create.
Yeah, erotica comes in other forms too, other than visual, right? I mean, romantic novels and sexy stuff. I mean, that's another kind of fantasy about sex that maybe isn't our own, but we're enticed by it, excited by it. That there seems to be a real difference in, like, my church friends about reading erotica and watching porn. Like, both of them introducing the other, but the watching of it, somehow or another, I guess, it is much more taboo than the reading about it. What do you think about that?
I think it's two different forms of the same thing. So it's interesting. I was shocked to hear women spend more money on erotic novels than men spend on porn.
No, that's not true.
Not true?
No.
None of these false.
Erotic novels are a $1 billion industry, but no, porn outweighs by a landslide. I mean, everything. The searches
right,
on the internet.
Listeners, please see if Lori and I are right on this and just let us know.
Still, though, you're right. Erotica and romantic novels are a $1 billion industry.
But there isn't a problem with that.
George, why am I a sex therapist? I should have been an erotic novel writer. I would love to do that.
You could do both.
Yeah.
Tell us a story, Lori.
All the time in the world to tell the story. Woohoo.
Well, your question's a good one. Why is one scene more acceptable than the other? They're both introducing external. One's just more visual and one's more just in the imagination.
And I probably think that just on the positive side of it, right, sometimes to get going, to get aroused, it makes sense to introduce and borrow somebody else's fantasy about sex. I think men typically are more visual, so they like that. I think, you know, there's a lot of women out there that are visual, though, George, that love the way the male body looks, you know, want to see a hot male body, too. I don't see as many women talking about, you know, yeah, I really, you know, want a huge penis, you know, really watch porn for the huge penis. I really don't hear about that much. But I do think kind of the whole form, they like that. And I think the passion of it, you know, seeing a man really turned on is exciting for a lot of women. But I don't know where I was going with this here.
Well, the porn is focused more on the visual and the carnal, right?
Yeah.
And that just really physical act where it's not surprising that the novels are focused more on the emotional side of it. You know, the teasing, the building the scene, the anticipation and all that stuff. And we think both are great. How do we get couples to talk about why that's a gas pedal for them, right?
Yeah.
And if it's a break for the other person, to be able to talk about that. Like, it's also totally okay. You know, if your spiritual or religious beliefs are this is wrong and it's not for me, right? It's not for us. It's if you're on the same page, that's what matters the most as a couple. And if you feel like that's introducing sin or it's introducing something external and you want to keep it between the two of you and you're both on the same page for that, that's great. We're not here to judge people's choices in the bedroom. What we want to do is facilitate a space to have a conversation with each other.
And we want to honor and respect different cultural beliefs and different religious beliefs and, you know, faith choices that say, okay, this isn't for me, don't want this. And I suppose as a therapist, you know, I'm always right in the middle of the conflict with people. You know, one person feeling, sometimes they watch porn and they still feel guilty about it, but it feels like they still do it. And I'm not even talking about addiction or compulsion. It's just, you know, super exciting, and it's a lift for their day. It brings in a moment of relief. It's probably like chewing a stick of gum or something. You know, it's like it's fresh and minty. You know, it just is a good little lift. But then their partner says, you know what, you're introducing this during the day. And, you know, even if they don't masturbate to it, they still can watch it. That's what I hear from a lot of men. But then their partner finds out, their female partner, and it's, you know, it feels really offensive, really like they're being taken away. Even sometimes, George, with women who don't want to have sex that much, they object to it. It's like, you know, why are you doing that? I mean, maybe it's the moral objection, or the competitive objection.
Well, I think if you take a healthy perspective that says, what are the results? Is this helpful for your relationship, or is it hurtful for your relationship? I think there should be a warning label with anything that we're going to introduce outside of our relationship.
Yeah.
You know, I know I work with a lot of young men who have a really difficult time being intimate with a partner because their brain is so used to the stimulation of pornography and the control that gives, that when they're with a real person, it don't work.
Right.
Right. So again,
They can't get as aroused. They can't get as hot.
They can't get the stimulation that they're getting through the visual, right? If they're just with a partner. Ooh. And that's a problem. And that's something
that's
problem. People have to be aware of. What you're introducing could make the real thing hotter, or could make the real thing a little bit spicy, right? Mm-hmm. So that's really what the hope of today is, just to help couples have a conversation with each other.
Yeah. How do you feel about porn? What are the breaks? What's the gas? It's a hard one if there's already been hurt and tension about it. We know that. We know that it's going to be a hard conversation.
But what doesn't work is not talking about it. If one person's watching porn in secret, the other person's feeling betrayed by it, and they can't have a conversation about it, and before you know it, 10 years have gone by, and the sex between the two probably has plummeted. Right? If that couple can have a conversation around, what is it about the porn that turned you on? What can we do? Mm-hmm. What is it like that? All of a sudden, now we could start finding some common ground and start coming back together. There can be an opportunity into some really deep, vulnerable places for both people in this conversation. That's what I love about gas pedals and brakes, right? It gets to its really core places in the self that, you know, often are not discussed. And that's the opportunity here for everyone listening.
Okay, before we quit and go on break, I want to say one last thing about a break that, you know, just came up for me is, a lot of women say, we used to have, essentially, I think what they're describing is more vanilla sex. You know, you used to make love, different positions, not saying that they're boring, but now my partner wants me to do all these other things that he's seen in porn, and he's wanting it a lot more. And I don't, you know, and he's dissatisfied with what used to make us both really happy. And that feels bad to her. And maybe some of it is she doesn't want to do the other things, but some of it is just, I think she's responding to his dissatisfaction with what used to feel loving and exciting to her. So just another little break.
No, it's great. Something looks really cool, and then you try like, damn, that hurts. How the hell does that person do that position for so long? And right, and then you start comparing yourself and feeling like you're coming up short. And it's all right.
Okay.
Well, let's come back and talk more about external factors.
Okay, May 20th is our couples retreat.
Yeehaw!
So great sex, great love. You can find it on our website on foreplayradiosextherapy.com. And we just invite you as a couple to come and join us on May 20th. It's Friday. It's all day. We talk all about sex. We talk about everything.
And we do it in a way that's safe and not embarrassing. But if you come, you will have conversations you've never had before.
Yes. So May 20th, again, great sex, great love. Please join us.
Come on.
Uber Lube. Find uberlube.com and use the coupon Foreplay. It is silicone-based. It is a wonderful lubricant. I have people, and I've been recommending it forever, not just because they sponsor us, but I am so grateful for their sponsorship for us on the podcast. But really, I have had two people this week tell me, you're right, UberLube is really great. I'm like, right? It's silicone, so it doesn't get gummy. And so many of the other water-based lubricants get gummy. They don't feel good. Some of them you get allergic to. I don't like them. This one, I've never heard a bad report. It won't stain your sheets. It is something that you can even use in water, which I didn't know, but it doesn't wash off in water. So that could make like jacuzzi sex really, really fun. So try that. Again, uberlube.com with the coupon Foreplay. That helps us at the podcast. Please order some travel ones. You know, summer's coming, so order some of those travel packs that you can take. Uberlube.com, Foreplay is the coupon. Thanks so much. And George, there's hardly any clitoral stimulation in porn. I mean, it's all about intercourse, right? And they have intercourse forever.
A little bit of oral sex, but that's about it, right?
Well, yeah, women on men, usually, right? Hardly ever do you really see a man giving a woman cunnilingus. Can you say that three times? You know our ratings go up.
Cunnilingus.
You got to say it right, though.
I know. I'm learning. It'll take me time.
Yeah. I mean, I guess a little bit. Sometimes they show that, too. But I think it's probably a harder shot, right? You can't see as much as you can with oral sex for a male. Fellatio. So they show what is visual. And for a woman, it's hard to see that. And I think so many women, it just doesn't show really how to stimulate and how to bring a woman to orgasm. That's my complaint.
Oh, I think they also, what they show is perfectly shaped and formed, and it causes women to, you know, not want to see their own packages, which then makes it more of a break.
And just one last little criticism. They show female genitalia that is standardized. So right. It's all small labia. It's all like medium clitorises, hairless, you know, and it's the same vulva over and over and over. Whereas women, right. It's like this huge wide variety of how she looks. And then I hate it because women tell me, you know, I don't look right. I'm like, what do you mean you don't look right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're beautiful.
No, that's a really important thing to highlight, that there is no perfect shape or form and what it looks like. It's so different. That is what is normal.
Yeah.
And what is perceived or projected out there, and pornography is not doing that.
Right. Okay, what other external factors are we going to talk about?
Well, some couples like having some gummies or a couple drinks to loosen things up. Other couples want to introduce toys, take out that vibrator.
Okay, wait, let's go back to gummies and alcohol. So many people have a couple cocktails before they have sex in the evening. That's a disinhibitor. And I kind of think that works. Just putting away the racing thoughts of the day, the cares of the day. I'm not advocating alcoholism, and same with gummies, right? Many people use gummies to get loosened up. And I think the side effect of it is, you know, what I hear, they feel more desire and feel horny when they use it. And now that it's legalized in several states, we're going to figure out, I think with better research, just what it does do to sexual arousal and our bodies. I think I said this recently on a podcast, but you know, some of my breast cancer patients use it and it alleviates pain, genital pain that, you know, they have because they don't have estrogen. So they get horny and then they don't have pain. I mean, that's a blessing. And maybe you're against using THC, but that one, I'm sorry, kids, that's a blessing. When you've been down with cancer and you can feel desire and your body doesn't hurt when you have sex, yay that.
Yay that. Sounds like a gas pedal to me.
Yeah.
Right. And flip side of it, because you know I like doing that. Right. for some people.
My straight-laced ex-policeman, go ahead.
Where we get to the break, I mean, I do think, too, it's more than just what it's doing. It's the anticipation of that. Knowing you're going to have a glass of wine, knowing it's setting the stage, knowing, you know, it's likely to, after dinner you're going to have sex. I mean, there's something that really starts to prime the pump that becomes symbolic of, right?
I asked my husband last night, so is this like a whiskey night or... Do I need to burn calories on whiskey, or can I burn some calories on whiskey?
Nice.
That was my intro.
Go for it, Derek. Every couple has their own language. Are we going to have sex tonight, or are we not going to have sex tonight? It's usually in code, right?
Is it whiskey night?
I like that. Uh-huh. I like the couples that leave the door open or closed. There's so many symbols that are scattered for what we're going to do tonight, and couples just can't talk directly about it. You know, but the flip side of it is, alcohol and drugs can be a huge problem, right? So if you're counting the number of drinks, just the smell of alcohol on your partner's breath is going to be a huge turnoff for you, right? It's going to be like, oh, my partner's not really present. Mm-hmm. My partner's kind of falling asleep. My partner's not engaged. Again, it's the lack of engagement that so often becomes the break.
And I think the fear I hear from people, like, my partner needs to drink before they have sex with me. Like, why do they need to obliviate a little bit? What's wrong with me? You know, it goes to some sort of view of self where they feel like, okay, my partner, their drinking is saying something about me. My partner is saying they don't want to be with me sober.
Right.
Which, and I we're just talking wish those about, couples would have sex in the morning. You know, like, could you just not have sex in the morning? Because then you're sober and fresh. Okay,
well, we're always talking about that therapeutic window. Like, not enough stimulation doesn't work, or too much stimulation doesn't work. You're trying to keep people in their sweet spot. So if that alcohol kind of gets you primed, cool. But a lot of times it actually puts you to sleep, right? It actually causes you to, you know, your plumbing not
whiskey
to work so
what?
Well.
Whiskey what?
Whiskey slicky, right?
Something.
So again, couples can have a conversation around this. Hey, this is what I like about that glass of wine before dinner. Mm-hmm. And this is what kind of might turn me off. And usually it's one and one.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have this conversation versus avoiding it.
And one more gas pedal. I think there's something nice about the ritual. To me, it is a signal in my partnership. But I love it when my husband says, hey, can I make you a drink? It's like so sexy, you know, and it's so thoughtful. It's like thinking about me. It's pouring the drink, mixing it, getting the ice. The whole thing, it is auditory. It's like clink, clink, go the ice cubes. I'm like, woo, okay, I'm getting there. You know, it's just, I hear it, the whole invitation.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a ritual that is an invitation, and an invitation into not just sex, but into downtime with him, into talking, intimacy. Mm-hmm. You know, I love all that.
How many doctors, you know, if you're struggling to have a child and you're going through infertility and all these kind of stresses, and the doctor says, you know what, just put all that aside, go home, have a glass of wine, and just enjoy your partner.
Just do it. Right.
Been a bunch of babies born that way.
Yeah.
And so again, there's some value to that, and there could be some risk to it.
Right.
What about toys?
Toys. Yay.
Introducing that vibrator, you know, the whips, the feathers, what is the handcuffs, whatever.
The honey dust, all of those fun accoutrements to just spice up the moment. You know, there are a million toys. We, at Awakenings, we have a Christmas party, a Dirty Santa Christmas party, and you should see all the presents.
Wow.
All of us sex therapists, you know, there's whips and handcuffs and vibrators and G-strings, and just, we have a lot of fun.
Well, I've been amazed at how many couples that are not really too open to toys, never experienced toys, and then get a vibrator. What a difference that can make. And it would make sense if most women can't orgasm during intercourse, and you get a vibrator, and all of a sudden they're having orgasms. So that can change the game.
Yeah. And last week when you weren't here, we talked about how to use a vibrator on the podcast.
Wow.
So
I'm going to have to listen to that one.
You missed that one.
Damn.
Sorry, buddy.
Well, it certainly could be that gas pedal. Mm-hmm. Right. But if that toy is making the partner feel like you'd rather have the vibrator than me, I'm no longer needed. It becomes that competing attachment again. It causes the partner to not be engaged, and it starts to cause distance in the moment, which then becomes a problem. It makes sense why sometimes toys are a break, or maybe toys go against your values, mm-hmm. right? That's not what we're supposed to do. And, you know, that's okay too. We just want to give you space to talk about your breaks. Why is this thing a turnoff? And can your partner help you with that? Can we reduce some of those breaks? Or maybe then, you know, we got to compromise and put aside some of these gas pedals.
Yeah. I think vibrators are so mainstream now. There's not as much resistance as there was maybe 10, 15 years ago to it. People are more relaxed about the whole thing. But I did talk to somebody recently who said, you know, but why? I don't want to have to need that. And I'm like, yeah, but what about sometimes? What about every 15th time? You know, like just... I think sometimes if you're going to make love to the same person all your life, bringing in a few things that make it spicy, that can be fun.
I think there are some couples out there that are just really well matched and they don't need a lot of things mm-hmm. and they can have great sex for, you know, their whole relationship. So if that's you, you don't need toys. Cool. But, mm-hmm. you know, most couples being able to introduce some novelty that actually increases their levels of engagement and excitement with each other, why not explore it? To me, you win either way. Either it works and it's fun or it doesn't. And then you get to talk to each other about why that didn't work. You know, I didn't like that. That made me feel bad. It made me feel like you weren't there. All right, great. Then that's a doorway into deeper connection too.
I think too, what you're saying is so important because it's the discussion that really brings out our vulnerability. And that's what we learn from the research, that novelty later in the relationship is actually something that increases our experience, our deeper erotic experience with our partner, because we have to talk about it. We have to say, hey, this is what I've fantasized about. This is what I've thought about. What have you thought about? You know, and in that safe place, after making love to that person for some number of years, hopefully we have security and we can tell each other these sort of deeper fantasies and secrets. And yeah. And I know for some people that can be threatening. It's like, oh, you know, they can take it the wrong way. Is what we're doing not enough for you? Or, wow, you've been thinking about all these things and you never open up to me about it. That doesn't feel so good. You know, why haven't you trusted me earlier?
I think that's what's said. It comes from a place of love. People don't want to hurt their partner. They don't want to get rejected. They mm-hmm. don't want to be seen differently. So they hide or cut off these parts of themselves. And it's mm-hmm. such a missed opportunity. So we're hoping these external factors conversation just force you to talk more about sex. Most of us don't grow up talking about this. So I guarantee if you bring up vibrator, you're going to have a conversation.
Or anal plug, or what other kind of fun things can we talk about?
There you go.
And men like vibrators too, different kinds. And there's that kind, you know, just for the record now that you... Oh, do we have to quit? Oh, we have to quit.
Wow, Lori's leaving us with a teaser. This vibrator that does something none of us know. We'll have to do another show on that.
Yes, we will. Okay, thanks for listening.
Keep it hot, y'all.
Call in your questions to the 4Play question voicemail. Dial 833-MY-4PLAY. That's 833-MY, the number 4, play. And we'll use the questions for our mailbag episodes. All content is for entertainment purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for therapy by a licensed clinician or as medical advice from a doctor. This podcast is copyrighted by 4Play Media.